Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I am Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Fred, what happened next?
Well, I have the latest edition of Creation Magazine, Bob, okay. So we can take a look and see what happened next.
So it wasn't immediately after the creation, but eventually it came along.
That's right. So we can look at some modern day things.
And this organization is online, creation.com. What a fabulous magazine. And there's an article here, Fred, about the gorge that formed in Texas. Well, move over Grand Canyon.
Yeah, it's called Canyon Lake Gorge. It formed in 2002.
That's right. Now, it's not really as big as the Grand Canyon, is it?
Not quite. No. It's a miniature model, but boy, if you see this thing, it's pretty big.
But it's so cool. So Canyon Lake Gorge in Texas, this has become a major tourist attraction just recently because people are amazed, not creationist, we expect it, but the general public, coming out of public schools, they are amazed that such a large gorge was cut in such a short amount of time. Fred, it only took 42,000 years to cut this gorge.
Wow. So, and from what I hear, there's eyewitnesses to this. So those are some really people who lived a really long time.
That's right. Actually, it took just a few days. And as a result of public demand, this according to Creation Magazine, and you could Google this stuff and find out about Canyon Lake Gorge on the internet. But now there are tours of the gorge that began just a couple years ago.
Yeah, what happened is they had 35 inches of rain in a week, and it caused the Guadalupe River to cause the Canyon Lake to overflow Canyon Dam. And voila, we had this huge runoff.
Wow.
That formed this huge gorge.
And it overtopped the spillway of the dam, right?
Yeah, yes.
And the peak of the flood, the flow was 200 times normal. And in just 3 days, the rushing water gouged out a canyon that is 80 feet deep and 1.5 miles long. That's a big canyon.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the article mentions how most people are amazed to discover that such a huge gorge could form so quickly.
Yeah.
Why are they amazed at that? I guess they've been taught maybe that this happens over not 40,000 years, but millions of years. Pebbles at a time.
Look at Mount St. Helens, Engineers Canyon, the whole system of canyons up at Mount St. Helens. This massive canyon system, you show it to people and you say, how long do you think this formed? And they'd say millions of years. Look at all the strata, hundreds of strata in the canyon walls. And look at that little guy there at the bottom of the picture. And they say, look at that river flowing through the canyons. That river carved the canyons. But did it, Fred?
Well, it didn't. It was huge mud flows from Mount St. Helens that carved these canyons, not in a matter of not even days. It was a matter of hours that these things were formed.
In a matter of hours, these canyons were formed, sort of miniature scale models of the Grand Canyon, like Canyon Lake George in Texas. And it turns out that the river didn't form the canyon. The canyon formed the river.
Exactly.
And that's happening. You know, it's just extraordinary to see that creationists, we can demonstrate the mechanisms that form canyons. We could actually see and document them occurring.
You know, there's a geologist in our organization, a Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and he said that Mount St. Helens overturned 90% of what we knew about geology. And he got that from, you know, his fellow geologists. I mean, it really did overturn what they thought. Because here's something can happen. We witnessed it. It happened rapidly. Now, our last show, we talked about a process called cavitation, something that our friend Dr. Ed Holroyd has brought to our attention, you know, many years ago.
And in fact, in the previous issue of Creation Magazine, Dr. Ed Holroyd from Arvada, Colorado, dear friend of Bob Enyart Live and of Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, he was mentioned in an article on cavitation.
Yeah, basically cavitation is, you know, when water is flowing rapidly and it goes over, you know, hard surfaces or any kind of surface, it starts to form tiny bubbles.
Tiny bubbles.
And these bubbles at the microscopic level are exploding, and the amount of heat and energy was phenomenal. It was in the thousands of kelvins. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, thousands of degrees. The temperature rises to thousands of degrees in these tiny little bubbles as they collapse, because they collapse faster than the speed of sound. And so the physics there causes, when you have a dam breach, for example, you can have this major hole carved out in the bottom of a spillway where you could put a bulldozer in the hole. It's formed within an hour.
Yeah, that article mentioned this huge dam that, and so it cut, when they released some of the water in that from that dam, it carved out huge chunks of the mountain came flying out of these spillways, right, and it ruined their spillways.
And they're thinking, where those boulders come from?
Yeah. The point is cavitation, that process, water can cut through rock like butter. I mean,
right,
just instantaneously, just eat through it like butter like you wouldn't believe. It doesn't take millions of years. It takes seconds for cavitation to do its trick.
And so now this does bring up, of course, the Grand Canyon, because the atheists and evolutionists, they say, well, the Grand Canyon was formed by the Colorado River flowing for millions of years. And what's interesting about that is, if that were true, then there are a lot bigger rivers all over the world. Why aren't there Grand Canyons everywhere? There's only one. So saying, well, it was formed by a river flowing for millions of years, that just doesn't seem to cut it for explaining how the Grand Canyon formed.
It doesn't seem to cut it. What did cut it was a huge amount of water from a dam breach. And there's a lot of evolutionists now, geologists, who admit to that fact. They're called neocatastrophists. They say that a lot of catastrophes like this happen around the globe, but they don't want to admit to a global flood because they don't want to acknowledge anything in the Bible.
Yeah, they're afraid of that. And Walt Brown, his eighth edition of In the Beginning, has a whole chapter on the Grand Canyon. And it's a glorious chapter because it does such a great job. It maps Grand Lake that was breached and carved out the Grand Canyon. But Fred, as you've said, these neocatastrophists, these atheistic geologists, they used to say that the Colorado River eroded the canyon over a period of maybe 60 million years. But that idea is beginning to lose favor even among secular geologists.
Exactly. But, you know, they still will persist in invoking millions of years. You know, this article mentions that they'll acknowledge that most of the erosion happened through catastrophic flooding, but, you know, they still want millions of years in their religion, you know, mm-hmm, because they want to support this naturalistic idea and support evolution.
And it is funny, they'll say things like, and I saw this also on the Nova special with the Scablands up in the Northwest, that was formed by a large inland lake, its ice dam breached and carved out these thousands of square miles of the Scablands. So it happened in a flood from a dam breaching. And so they say, and it happened over many thousands of years. Or it's like, how long does it take a dam to breach and then the water to gash out catastrophically? It doesn't take hundreds of thousands of years. That kind of thing happens within hours and days, weeks at most. And even here with the Grand Canyon, they'll say, oh, it took thousands of years for this, you know, breach dam. Yeah. When massive lakes have their dams breached so that you have cataclysmic results, that stuff happens within hours and days.
That's right. And this one here, the Canyon Lake breach, they believe it carved it out in 3 days. I mean, that's what we witnessed. 3 days, Bob.
We witnessed
that's
that
a
there.
Lot. That's not quite on the same scale as millions of years.
No, it's quicker. And, Fred, the Grand Canyon, the atheists, the geologists, they can never explain the side canyons. There are so many, there's scores of side canyons that are just so extraordinary, and they go from the rim down to the bottom of the canyon, and they have no apparent water sources, and the side canyons have side canyons. And there are these extraordinary slot canyons, and the vast majority of the world's slot canyons are on the Colorado Plateau, and it's all evidence of catastrophic water drainage at an unprecedented scale, because after the global flood, there were high land lakes that were unstable. And they eventually, many of them around the world, breached. And the most extraordinary caused, you know, the Scablands and the Grand Canyon and so on.
Well, anyways, Bob, going on the next article, I really like this one. It's about these unique eyes on insects.
Ooh, insect eyes.
And it inspired an advanced camera by one of these neat companies, this one in, I think, Great Britain, BAE Systems.
Mm-hmm. Now, insects, aren't they sort of primitive insects?
Yeah, they're real simple.
They're real simple.
I mean, that's
right?
What evolution is. They and, like to use these,
you know,
words. To...
You know, Fred Williams, maybe we're being too sarcastic, you and I. It's so hard not to be when you see evolutionists speaking of simple life forms, and they're so wildly sophisticated. They're not simple. But in this case, there's a tiny insect. What is it called, this insect? On page 8, you said this is on page 8?
Yeah, it's called the Xenus pecci.
Xenus pecci.
It's a parasite of some sort.
An insect that most of us have never heard of, and it has tiny little eyes. Could you describe the insect itself, how it lives?
Yeah, it lives in paper wasps. Usually
what?
Paper wasps.
It lives in the
wasp?
In
a wasp, yes.
That cracks me up.
In fact, the female spends her entire life inside.
The female of this species spends her entire life inside a wasp.
And so she doesn't need her eyes.
Okay.
But the male needs to find other wasps with females inside, so he has special eyes. They're kind of shaped like raspberries.
Wow. And so the female doesn't need her eyes because she lives inside a wasp.
Yeah.
Her whole life.
And this article mentions that she has a sex pheromones that advertise basically where she's at so these males can go out and find her.
So the males will see a wasp, a paper wasp, and they'll say, well, for some reason that wasp is attracting me more so than the other wasps. He's not
right.
Really quite sure why, but God has designed pheromones, which are like hormones, but they're chemical signals between organisms, not within an organism. That's a hormone. So she puts out a pheromone. The male has eyes that look sort of like they're shaped like raspberries to find that female, to find that wasp. And it turns out that these insects, they have compound eyes. And most insects, their eyes are broken up like into hundreds of chunks, the lenses of their eyes. But this insect, this tiny insect, only has about 50. And that's interesting because each chunk that the lens is broken up into is larger than a typical insect's compound eyes. So if each eye is broken up into larger and fewer chunks, it turns out that they have more light receptors, about 100 light receptors. And so instead of seeing points, they see fields or chunks of images. And so it requires dramatic changes in the insect's brain to process these images. They take chunks and they overlap the chunks to form. It'd be like taking a picture in a magazine and cutting it up into puzzle pieces, and your brain has to 1,000 times a second or so put those chunks back together.
Well, you know, and this is an amazing design. And what's interesting about this is this particular eye design is unique in the insect world. So, Bob, how do all these different eye designs evolve separately over time? I mean, isn't it amazing the faith you have to believe that this can happen by chance or natural selection?
Absolutely startling. Evolution, Darwin, you know, he thought, well, there's a tree of life. And so if you look at insects, all insects will have similar kinds of functions. And he didn't know about genetics, but if he did, they'd all have similar DNA that you could trace back to the first insect. It turns out they have wildly different designs for the same functions, like eyesight. And their DNA is wildly divergent, and it matches species and families all over the animal and plant kingdom, not just in insects.
Yeah, and this design, this eye design, is unique to the insect world. And it's really similar to trilobite eyes. And so trilobite, what is that,
wow.
Bob?
It's some kind of an extinct arthropod, no?
What's an arthropod, Bob?
Well, it's a creature. Well, it lived in the sea, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it's a sea animal. So did this insect evolve from this fish? Or not fish, but this marine life animal?
Yeah, they come from such different widely separated parts of the animal kingdom that evolutionists have a very hard time saying that this tiny insect evolved from a trilobite.
Yeah, because it's from vastly different branches of their tree of life that we're going to talk about later.
So, Fred, you mentioned BAE earlier, a British aerospace company, engineering. You know, I worked
You worked for McDonnell Douglas, didn't you?
Helicopter company, that's right. And it's so cool to see that the engineers at BAE, they're designing an imaging system for missiles for unmanned vehicles, and they're modeling those image systems on this insect's eyes.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, they've actually done other things with looking at God's creative design and tried to mimic it.
Yeah, that's an entire field of study applying engineering lessons that are learned from
the master designer.
The master designer, microbiologist. We study creatures, plants, animals, insects, and we're finding out better ways to make things function.
That's amazing.
It is so cool. All right, Fred, what else? We've got the gorge in Texas that formed in 3 days, these insect eyes.
We were just talking about, how it didn't fit their tree of life because these insect eyes were so vastly different than the trilobite eyes that they were similar to.
Right.
That it kind of made problem, you know, it creates a problem for their tree of life. Well, I really like this article and hear about the New Scientist magazine, Bob.
That's an evolutionary magazine, and they had a cover story a few months back. Fred, I did a sermon at Denver Bible Church on this cover story. Darwin Was Wrong is the title of their cover story.
Yeah, it's on the cover of the magazine and on their tree. They got a picture of it here in the magazine.
A picture of the tree of life. And in the tree of life, in the drawing of the tree of life, they have Darwin Was Wrong. And they say, cutting down the tree of life. This is so dramatic. When I saw this cover story, I was elated because the force of observations, Fred, the onslaught of scientific observations are creating a constant crisis for the evolutionist, because the predictions about the moons of Saturn or about DNA, they thought it was all junk DNA, you know, or about the tree of life. The evidence is that all insect eyes don't evolve from the same original insects. And all certain kinds of proteins and all certain kinds of organs, and among sponges, they're closer to bats or horses than they are other sponges. It's just bizarre.
It's kind of like the theme of our show has been that God, at every turn, at every corner, thwarts a naturalistic explanation. It's amazing. He just puts everywhere. There's no reason. People are without excuse to claim that this happened naturalistically.
Right, especially people who study science, because they're seeing the hand of God, the design of God at work. And so I did a sermon on this cover at Denver Bible Church. And Fred, people could come to Denver Bible Church Sunday morning, Sunday evening Bible studies, Sunday school in the mornings, or they can call us 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, and say, I'd like to subscribe to Bob's monthly sermons, and you get them on CD mailed to you once a month. Well, Darwin Was Wrong is the cover of this evolutionary scientist, and it's about DNA evidence that has forced evolutionists to discard Charles Darwin's evolutionary tree of life. Now, they don't all agree, but Fred, the force of the evidence is forcing scientists, evolutionists by the thousands, to say we got to dump the tree of life. Darwin Was Wrong.
Yeah, the article mentions that these biologists are becoming polarized on this issue. I like what this one evolutionary biologist said, quoted in the magazine. We have no evidence at all that the tree of life is a reality. No evidence at all.
No evidence at all that the tree of life is a reality. Because, Fred, now they've sequenced thousands upon thousands of species, and they are finding overwhelming evidence that if the tree of life was right, you'd have the trunk. And so everything evolving from the trunk would show similarities, especially in similar functions. And then as it begins to branch out into insects or mammals or whatever, you would find clusters of similarities. But there are so many examples that proteins are designed so differently, they match species far across the tree of life. So the tree of life is falling down.
Yes. And, you know, these evolutionary biologists that realize this, are they abandoning the theory of evolution?
Well, they're not abandoning it, right?
Yeah, it says, you know, it mentions how they're not, they say they're not abandoning it, but they don't explain why they shouldn't.
Right.
And the reason they're not abandoning it, of course, is because evolution is a religion to them. It's not science, it's a religion.
It's right. So they hold to it with the passion of a true believer. And like global warming, well, one leading anti-creationist blogger is still angry, he wrote, that in the midst of his and other efforts to debunk creationists, that's Fred Williams, Bob Enyart, Ken Ham, Walt Brown, all these creationists, Fred, he says, New Scientist magazine hands the creationist a propaganda gold mine, and he's so angry he's calling for a boycott. He says, don't buy New Scientist. So he wants them, he's openly saying, let's not report what's actually happening with our scientific observations. It's too threatening to us.
That's right. Let's not let the facts get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a crack up.
And, you know, this magazine is not a friend of creationists. I mean, it's a very, you know, they have a lot. Their emphasis is against God. So
oh,
it's not
yeah,
like
big
this
time.
Magazine.
Now, New Scientist.
This is a candid admission for them.
Right.
But at the same time, they're going to, of course, report how these guys still believe in evolution. But they don't really explain why.
Yeah. Darwin was wrong on the tree of life. And they point out that Darwin had two theories, natural selection and the tree of life. And they said a natural selection would have never taken off if it wasn't for his tree of life parallel theory. And now they're saying the tree of life part was wrong. So it's just powerful. Fred, on the same page in this Creation magazine, there's an interesting related article about how evolutionists have to completely redraw the alleged family tree. Now, this is an example of how the family tree idea is crumbling. But before we say that, you have an announcement. Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship has a meeting coming up.
Yes, we do. On August 14th, we're having our next meeting. Now, we have a new meeting place that we're going to meet at the second Friday of every month, and it's at Bethlehem Lutheran Church. That's on 2100 Wadsworth Boulevard in Lakewood. So, again, we've got a new meeting location. It's still the same time, 7 o'clock. And the speaker this month, again, on August 14th, is Mr. Russ Miller. He's a very prolific speaker on creation. He's toured the world, basically. He does this as a full-time job. I have not heard him, but I hear he's fantastic. And we very much look forward to him as a speaker.
So that's a week from tonight.
That's a week from tonight. And then on August 29th, yours truly, I will be giving a talk at Holly Hills Church in Highlands Ranch. That's at 9770 South Foothills Parkway.
All right.
And the time for that is 10 o'clock to 11:30, and I'm going to be talking about defending the faith and the war of the world views.
And give a website where people can go if they miss some of that,
okay.
If they're driving.
So, yeah, go to youngearth.org.
Youngearth.org.
And it'll have both. That's the website for Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. So
you remember who registered that originally?
Was that you?
No, my dear friend Daniel Hedrick.
Oh, okay.
Daniel Hedrick grabbed youngearth.org when the internet was young.
Okay,
and
perfect.
He donated that to Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship.
Yeah, so that's our website, and it'll mention both the speaker that's coming up this next Friday, and then my talk on August 29th.
Great.
If you want a reminder of how to get there. Again, that's youngearth.org.
Thanks, Fred Williams. And I'd like to make an announcement. Next month, September, is our annual telethon for KGov.com to keep Bob Enyart Live on the internet for the next year, and we have a real goal. A desperate goal of raising $40,000. That is a big amount. But we need to do it. That's in September. And for the month of August, for those who have never given to Bob Enyart Live, we want to give you the opportunity to help us get a jump start. If you give, subscribe to a monthly Bible study album or our DVDs or our sermons, or if you give a one-time donation, we will apply that amount starting September 1st on our September telethon. So those who have never given before to Bob and Yurt Live, you can help us get a jump start on September. The number 1-800-836-9278 or online at kgov.com. So Fred Williams, there is an article here about the development of a nervous system. And the way Darwin and evolutionists have imagined it for 150 years is that the nervous system is so sophisticated, it could only have possibly evolved once. And then all different creatures that have a nervous system, they all received that, you know, inheritance, evolutionarily speaking. As it turns out, there's a problem with that, isn't there?
There is a problem. And again, this is an article from New Scientist magazine, and the headline summed it up. Many marine animals challenge evolution because what they've found is that when they've looked at their nervous system, it's so different that they believe it evolved independently.
Independently from any other animal.
Such a complex thing. Independently. Again, we're talking about this.
The nervous system. So you've got like jellyfish and complex animals, and you look at this simple question. This mini marine animal is called a plasozoan, and these plasozoans have forced evolutionists to say, you know what, the nervous system, it could not have evolved once. It had to evolve twice.
I mean, they have a hard enough time explaining how it evolved once.
Right. And so the family tree is crumbling. And, Fred, it's really fun to have you on the show. And could we do it again, another episode soon of Real Science Friday?
Oh, I'd love to, Bob. This is great stuff to go over.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. And Bob and Yurt Live, we've been airing for 18 years. We've been on the internet at KGov, KGOV.com for many of those years. And we started way back when, in 1991, in radio in Denver on AM 670 KLTT, which is the most powerful Christian radio station in the country, and that's a big reason why we have reached so many people all throughout Colorado and the neighboring states, and then thanks to the internet, all over this country, and even some around the world. So please, if you can, help us. Our website again, KGov, KGOV.com. If you've never given to Bob and Yurt Live before, and you give this month of August, we will use your gift to jumpstart our September telethon. And so you guys that have never given before, please, this is such an important time to help out Bob and Yurt Live. Fred, again, thanks for being here, Fred.
Thanks, Bob, for having me.
You're very welcome. And in Arvada, Colorado, Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school that's in Arvada. And our website again, KGOV.com. This is Bob and Yurt. May God bless you.